You're listening to the news at 1. 95% of people over the age of 70 will have received their first dose of COVID-19 vaccine by the end of this week, according to the HSE Chief Executive Paul Reid, with 26,000 people, he says, in their 60s being vaccinated this week. Registration for those aged between 60 and 64 begins today. But the HSE is also warning that any restriction in the use of the single-shot Johnson & Johnson vaccine would significantly impact on the rollout. A decision is expected next week on the safety of the J&J jab. The AstraZeneca vaccine, meanwhile, already restricted to the over 60s, has been linked to what are described as a small number of blood clotting events here. We're joined in studio by Dr. Lorraine Nolan, Chief Executive of Ireland's Drugs Regulator, the Health Products Regulatory Authority. Dr. Nolan, a very good afternoon to you, and thank you once again for talking to us on the programme.
Afternoon, Brian.
Now, in your latest safety update issued last evening, you say that you've been closely monitoring reports of blood clotting events, including any occurring in combination with low platelets. Now, what have you been watching? What have you found?
Okay, Brian, yes, you're correct. Yesterday we published our sixth safety report on the since the beginning of the rollout of the immunisation campaign nationally. And what we are seeing overall in the usage of 1.3 million doses of vaccines, we have over 6,600 reports made to us. And the vast majority of those describe what are the common side effects that we associate with vaccination. So injection site reactions, headache, mild, you know, flu-like symptoms, all of which that are transient and pass. So you've mentioned there in your introduction the issue of these rarer blood clotting events, and really important to highlight that when we're speaking about these blood clotting events, we are talking about a combination of clotting, so that's thrombosis, in combination with low platelets, and that's thrombocytopenia. So this is very, very unusual. And we have been closely monitoring this issue in terms of the reports that are coming into us. So, and it's in our report there, I can confirm that we have received a very small number of reports which describe to us a combination of these two factors. In saying it's very small, I'm talking about less than five reports out of that 6,600. And really important for me to say here at this point, for the individuals in question, this issue was picked up very quickly after vaccination, and they received the appropriate treatment, and they are all making a very good recovery.
And are you satisfied that these incidents were related to the vaccine? There is a link.
Well, what I'd say to you at this point is we are continuing to investigate these cases as you would expect. And I mean, in relation to, you know, the position that has come from the EMA in relation to the AstraZeneca vaccine and these rare, unusual forms of blood clotting, they have said the link is plausible. So, you know, they do fit that clinical picture. And obviously, we are considering our evaluation in that context. But I do think it's really important to emphasise the rarity of these events. You know, we really are talking about something that is happening in around the numbers of 1 to 10 per million. And particularly, and in the context of the situation that we have seen here in Ireland, I think this really does go to show the importance of getting information out there earlier to people that are being vaccinated, and also to healthcare professionals of exactly the kinds of symptoms to be aware of, so that when people do present, that can be immediately picked up and they get the right treatment early.
Yeah, very, very rare, but it has led to the use of AstraZeneca being withdrawn for all of those under the age of 60, which is has had a significant or potentially significant impact on the vaccination program. And the reports from elsewhere were suggesting that when these incidents occurred, it was in people, younger age group people, and that women were more susceptible. Is that the case?
Yeah, and I suppose that probably brings us on to talking a little bit more around the cases that kind of have been observed. And I mean, the EMA have been very clear about this. Particularly, I'll speak here about the context of the AstraZeneca vaccine. It's not possible at this point, in view of the rarity of the number of cases, to determine, you know, if there are specific risk factors such as, you know, age or gender, because you have to look at the way the vaccine has been used across the member states in Europe, and it is predominantly been used to vaccinate healthcare workers. They tend to be younger age groups, and we do tend to have a higher predominance of females working with our health, within our health services. So they are confounding factors. So as of yet, in terms of, you know, who's particularly at risk, we can't say that. And that's a combination of the rarity, but also the compounding factors in relation to the way the vaccine has been used.
On the one hand, though, you say age is not a risk factor or can't be clearly stated as a risk factor, but you're continuing to administer the vaccine to those in their 60s.
No, what I'm talking about here, Brian, really is in relation to the regulatory position on the vaccine, because, you know, at all stages along, it has always remained the case that the overall benefit risk of this vaccine remains positive. The licensed use is for anyone above the age of 18. The kinds of decisions in terms of age restrictions that you're talking about here have been really made by public health bodies. So you're talking about immunisation committees at national levels across the member states. And I mean, there are sound reasons for that. And we can very often have situations as where we will have differences between the regulatory position and that of national immunisation committees. The regulatory position, of course, is taken into consideration in how they make their determination or advice on how the vaccine should be used. But they have to consider other issues. That would be with the risks of a vaccine, the epidemiology of the disease locally, but also vaccine availability. Right. And ultimately, the decisions they are making is to make sure the safest possible rollout of the vaccination programme.
And that brings us on to Johnson & Johnson. It being considered by the National Immunisation Advisory Committee, of which I think you're a member, and we're told that there'll be a recommendation perhaps next week. What's feeding into this process, this decision-making process in relation to Johnson & Johnson?
In terms, well, we have had an announcement of the outcome of the review that the EMA has been conducting on the Janssen and Janssen vaccine on Tuesday of this week. They again have concluded that, you know, on the safety and the effectiveness of this vaccine, but in the case of these rarer forms of blood clotting, which again describes a picture of clotting in combination with low platelets, they have concluded that a link between the vaccine is plausible. The EMA has been very clear in relation to it. That information now has to be considered by the member states from a public health perspective in terms of how they would like to use the vaccine within their immunisation campaign nationally, or rather what is the best use of that vaccine for them, considering the situation with the disease, the capacity of their health systems, but also taking into account their availability of alternatives. And just to come back to the point you made earlier in relation to the over 60s and the AstraZeneca vaccine, I mean, the National Immunisation Committee and Professor Butler have been really clear on the reason for the determination of the continued use in the over 60s. And that is because the risk of the disease in terms of particularly death in the over 60s is so much greater. And we know from ECDC statistics, in a million people over the age of 60 that do contract COVID, we have seen an observation of 20,000 deaths. And if you compare that to the risk, or what is the incident, or the number of these events, of these rare blood clotting events that have been seen, which is 1 to 10 in a million. So you're comparing something of death, 20,000 in a million versus 1 to 10 in a million of these rare blood clots.
Can I ask you in relation to the gap, the interval between the two dose vaccines? Now, the manufacturers have their own recommendations. The approval was given by the European Medicines Agency on the basis that there would be a particular interval. But clearly, authorities in individual countries, their hands aren't tied. It's possible, is it not, for a regulator to make their own decisions about these intervals? We could lengthen or shorten the interval, perhaps, with AstraZeneca, lengthen it in the case of other vaccines. Is that right?
Yeah, you are talking about there about, you know, considering the timing of the intervals between the vaccines with the view to maybe, you know, extending it for Pfizer, for example, and that is to give more people in the population a level of protection. And, you know, that may be a valid strategy, but in terms of where we are with these vaccines, the regulatory position, and I'll speak maybe here about Pfizer, remains that the interval between the two doses, it is licensed at 3 weeks. We are using it at a 4 week interval currently in Ireland. And, you know, also within the clinical trial that it was evaluated under, some people would have received the vaccine up to 6 weeks. So we do have data on the use up to 6 weeks, you know, but the problem is if we don't use it in line with the way that has been used in the clinical trial, we have less certainty in relation to the level of protection from the disease that vaccine can give us.
What about AstraZeneca? It's, I think, a 3 month interval. And the point has been made that that could mean mean that people who receive that in their 60s at this point will have to wait quite some time before they're fully vaccinated.
Yeah, and I mean, you are right. The regulatory position on the AstraZeneca vaccine is that the interval should be between 4 and 12 weeks. And you are right, there are choices within that in terms of when we could choose to give the second dose. But there is some evidence from the clinical trials, and particularly in relation to the immunogenicity, and that is the level of neutralizing antibodies that the vaccine generates, mm-hmm. that is higher when the interval is left at 12 weeks. So, you know, there is strong scientific reasons for the longer interval that could be used to support that argument of maintaining it at 12 weeks as well.
Very good. Dr. Lorraine Nolan, Chief Executive of the Health Products Regulatory Authority. Thanks for talking to us here on the programme.